Hello, this is the Winchester and District Talking newspaper for the week ending Friday the 13th of October 2017. The extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle this week have been edited by Angela Ling, Carol Fraser and Jane Thomas. Your readers today are Maria Head.
Hello.
John Regan.
Hello there.
And Daphne Poupart.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Tom Williams. The main headlines this week are: housing plan may double in size, questions over what's new in sports centre, and chance to go straight to jail in Monopoly Winchester. So, may we have the story behind the first headline, please, Maria?
Housing plan may double in size. Civic chiefs want to double the amount of new social housing built over the next 3 years. Winchester City Council had planned to build 300 homes, but has now announced a new figure of 605. Council officers have identified sites for affordable housing across the district for schemes of varying size. The schemes will provide homes for older people and families, and the ambitious plans also aim to provide for young people who want to take their first steps on the housing ladder. Potential sites include ones that may prove controversial, such as plans for 65 homes on land off Harestock Road and 80 on Dyke's Farm off Eastern Lane, which is within the South Downs National Park. There is also a proposal to put 100 homes above garages near the four blocks of flats off Winnell Manor Road. Caroline Horrell, leader of Winchester City Council and portfolio holder for housing, said, "We want to help our residents by delivering affordable housing, and so far our plans to deliver 300 homes are on track. I am delighted that we are doubling our target to 600. We aspire to deliver quality, affordable housing for residents of all ages across the district and reduce our waiting list. It is important to offer people a choice of housing." The news comes as Winchester City Council's Cabinet Housing Committee also approved plans which mean that the Valley Scheme for 76 new homes in Stanmore is a step closer to being delivered. A spokesman said, "We are working with the landowners and developers to bring forward plans for affordable housing on various sites throughout the district. Discussions are at an early stage, however. The council is committed to engaging with local communities and other stakeholders as the plans evolve. The major sites identified for housing include two potential schemes in Winnell, one for 100 homes, the other for 80 homes at Dyke's Farm. We are also looking to build 65 homes in Harestock." Councillor Ian Tate, a long-time advocate of social housing, said, "We need a significant number of houses to be built. We should be buying land and using planning powers to allow us to build. We should be building new council estates." What Councillor Horrell could be saying is that when we review the local plan, we should be looking to allocate another Barton Farm type development, but directed at affordable housing. "I fully endorse the programme. It will need political leadership to translate it into actual houses. The council will not need to fund the whole programme. For example, Quantum would fund the building of houses on the Welsh's land off Harestock Road." Councillor Tate pointed out that plans for social housing had been hit by the reduction in the number of affordable homes at the 3,500 home North Whiteley scheme.
questions over what's in new sports centre. Concerns have been raised that facilities at the proposed multi-million pound Winchester Sport and Leisure Centre may not have enough provision for a wide range of sports. As reported in the Chronicle, an Olympic-sized swimming pool, hydrotherapy suite and four squash courts with movable walls are just some of the ideas for the £37 million centre at Bar End to replace the ageing River Park Leisure Centre. But in the lead-up to an outline business case being put forward, the City Council's Overview and Scrutiny Committee discussed whether there was enough space for a variety of sports, with plans currently for an 8 badminton court-sized hall instead of a 12. A needs analysis study by the Sports Consultancy concluded that there is an oversupply of 23 sports halls in the district and therefore recommended a reduction in sports hall space in the project. Emma Back, Chief Executive of Winchester Sport, Art and Leisure Trust, SALT, told the meeting she supported, quote, the vision that's been set out for the project, end quote, but said that not all the spare capacity mentioned was usable by clubs. She said this was because school halls often had restricted usage times that some are not fit for purpose and some, like the boys' school Winchester College, had no netball markings. She added that there had been no real consideration of gymnastics facilities, athletics, nothing about a new home for the boxing club, which will lose its home. When asked by Councillor Lucille Thompson about the suitability of school sports halls, Mrs. Back replied, for some sports they're suitable, some they're not suitable at all. They often don't have the right amount of runoff. There may not be space for people to officiate at games safely, and no space for spectators. Councillor Kim Gottlieb said, the proposal to reduce the size of the sports hall is a significant one which could compromise the current and future ambitions of a wide range of sports. It cannot happen unless the proposal is thoroughly investigated in conjunction with our partners and all the sports clubs and then supported by all concerned. The council needs to be absolutely certain that the new centre will live up to its promise to serve all residents across the whole district. There was also discussion about two exempt papers on the project that were not heard in public session, one of which was a draft document and the other judged to be commercially sensitive. Councillor Martin Todd asked what was confidential in the two papers that needed protecting. And Councillor Kim Gottlieb replied, I think it's because they've not been finished. I think the public should be assured that this will be made public in due course. But Councillor Todd added, the public interest here is in robust discussion and decision-making. I personally recognise that some of the figures may change, but I'd rather have it out in the open for debate, because we're about to make a decision on this paper. Chairwoman Councillor Kelsey Lerney said, we are actually a scrutiny body. We're not making a decision. The committee does believe that this should become an open paper as soon as possible, so the public can have a look at it. But we do need to have accurate papers before they're published. Following public consultation and discussions with clubs and governing bodies, the City Council will work with Winchester University, who will be putting £6 million into the scheme. The Pindar Trust, a charity which helps disabled people, will also be putting £1 million towards the hydrotherapy suite.
Chance to go straight to jail in Monopoly Winchester. Ever thought about buying Winchester Cathedral, or perhaps even the Hampshire Chronicle? Well, now you can. Sort of. Fans of city's landmarks will be able to become property magnates as Monopoly officially launched its Winchester version of the famous board game. Winning Moves UK, makers of the game, says the launch forms part of the 200th anniversary celebrations marking Jane Austen's death, and added that it will be a lasting legacy to both Winchester and Miss Austen. They also say it is a love letter to Winchester, England's former capital. Benjamin Thompson, custom games manager at Winning Moves UK, said, "The game showcases Winchester's crown jewels. It is a celebration of and a love letter to Winchester. The game is a lasting legacy to the city and its people. We would like to thank everyone who has voted for the landmarks that appear and star on it." Following a public vote, landmarks such as the Cathedral, Jane Austen's house in College Street, King Alfred's statue and the Theatre Royal feature on the board game, which is available in stores from today. Homeless charity Trinity Winchester also features, replacing the old Kent Road square because, Mr. Thompson said, it provides disadvantaged people the first rung on the housing ladder. Sue McKenna, operations director at Trinity Winchester, said, "We are thrilled to have landed on Old Kent Road. Our work helps local people in need as well as supporting the Winchester community. Being nominated to appear on the board shows that Trinity is considered a crucial part of the city." The game will have Winchester-themed community chest and chance cards, including one which rewards players for winning a Jane Austen writing contest, while another pays big dividends, gaining a first at Winchester University and landing a dream job. The Chronicle replaces Fleet Street, the former home of the London newspaper industry. A Southampton version of the board game is also available to buy. And that's illustrated by a couple of pictures, a big one of Mr. Monopoly himself standing in the Great Hall, holding a £500 Monopoly note, wearing a top hat, a big white moustache and a silver-topped cane. And the second one is the Monopoly box itself. It says Winchester Edition, and it features all the Winchester landmarks.
That concludes the headlines. And we continue with the obituary notices. The following deaths have been announced. Atherton, Kath Atherton, aged 73. Brill, Sally Brill, peacefully at St Thomas's Nursing Home, Basingstoke. Cocup, Lieutenant Commander Brian Cocup, peacefully at Sutton Manor Nursing Home, aged 91. Every, Diana Mary Jennifer Every, suddenly but peacefully. Harrison, Doreen Harrison, aged 86. Jenkins, Ronald Richard Jenkins, suddenly but peacefully at Royal Hampshire County Hospital, aged 84. Lambert, Audrey Clint Lambert, peacefully aged 82. Radcliffe, Peter Hurst Radcliffe, peacefully aged 81. And Witts, Muriel Kathleen Witts, peacefully at home, aged 88. Christian comment this week is read by Maria. Thank you, Maria.
And Christian comment is written this week by Mary Gray and is titled Justice for Girls, a Global Priority. Yesterday was International Day of the Girl Child. But why, we may ask, is the girl child singled out for special attention? While it is true that poverty hits the whole family and community, it is still the girl child who suffers most. She suffers from both sexism and childism, for she is at the intersection of women's rights and children's rights. Just look at one example. The question of her fate in post-conflict Rwanda. This is particularly crucial, for during the Rwandan genocide in 1994, girl children suffered appalling sexual violence based on gender, never mind their age. Not only were two-year-olds raped, but there was a clear intention to make women and girls suffer differently from men and boys. While the latter were killed rapidly with a single shot or machete stroke, girl children and women were mutilated, tortured, and left to die slowly. However, to focus solely on the sexual abuse of girl children in conflict prevents us seeing other aspects of the discrimination they undergo in numerous areas of their daily lives. Some think that the sexual violence suffered by girl children during the genocide can be seen as emblematic of a general pattern of sexual discrimination in Rwandan society. This was itself unleashed by the exacerbation of the ethnic conflict. But justice for girl children is urgently needed on a global level. In Wells for India's work in Rajasthan, education for girl children is a priority. I am always very moved on our annual visits to the projects when women approach us and shyly but proudly tell us that their daughters are at school. Of course, this means personal sacrifices for them, the burden of increased housework and no one to help with daily care of babies and small children. Gospel inspiration for the well-being of girl children is definitely a goal. I sometimes wish it was clearer. Yes, Jesus went out of his way to raise Jairus' daughter from the dead, but why didn't he include women among his 12 apostles? I'm aware of the standard response to this, but it created a precedent for women's leadership, or lack of it, until the green shoots of the last century. I am thankful that the role of women was kept alive through the ages by courageous abbesses, for example, by social activists like Elizabeth Fry, a Quaker, but also by countless unseen women, mothers and grandmothers like my own, who believed in education for women and fought for it with great personal cost. I always return to the prophet Isaiah for inspiration. In his great vision of the return of all people to the holy mountain at the end of time, he says, "And a little child will lead them." And why not the girl child?
Now we move to letters to the editor, and the first letter is read by John. Thank you, John.
Yes, and this is a concern that seems to be raising the blood pressure locally. It's headed St. Cross Concern, and it's signed by Councillor Ian Tate of Berwick Road in Winchester, who seems to have kicked the whole thing off. Sir, recently your paper has reported on the consternation felt by a number of people over my concerns about the accommodation provided for the Brothers of St. Cross Hospital. I must firstly apologise to the brothers, as it was never my intention to cause them any distress, and I do so now most humbly. That said, I had already mentioned to a number of them my concerns, as I had to fellow trustees. It's also true to say that some of the brothers have some radical ideas on how to improve their homes, and that certainly this includes building new accommodation there. I must explain that the term which I used, fit for purpose, doesn't mean that there are squalid, damp and unsanitary accommodations, but it's more to do with whether the flats are Disability Discrimination Act, DDA, compliant, amongst other things. That's quite important for a community of older people, I feel. They are not, and nor will any of the first floor flats ever be, available or fit until after the expensive refurbishment programme has been completed. My argument to the trustees was whether there was merit in at least considering which ones would be fully DDA compliant, and also which ones would meet current building regulations and all the other rules dealing with housing for older people. I believe most trustees did not wish to consider this option. By making my suggestion, I felt obliged to at least come up with some alternative ways of using the existing almshouses. One thought was to a retreat run by the diocese, similar to Old Arlesford Place, or possibly for a hotel or bed and breakfast, as would be offered by a charity like the Landmark Trust. I would also like to mention that I'm also a trustee of St John's Winchester Charity, and we're about to submit planning applications for 31 new almshouses which will be fit for purpose under the DDA, so it can be done. I love St Cross and think that it's a quite wonderful place and must be protected. However, I have serious concerns about certain aspects of the accommodation provided, and that's from Councillor Ian Tate.
And now a short letter on the same theme, and this comes from Mike Sherwood. Sir, Councillor Tate's suggestion that the Brothers of the Hospital of St Cross should be moved into modern, purpose-built accommodation and the hospital turned into a hotel is quite one of the daftest I have heard this year. It is my experience of life that it is frequently better to leave things as they are, rather than to make improvements which turn out to be just the opposite. And that's from Mike Sherwood, Wright's Close, South Wanston.
And the next letter from John Duckworth concerns a very hot topic at the moment. Sir, Judy Hickman's letter, Chronicle, September the 28th, is almost entirely right in deprecating the ludicrous deviation of a 2,000-year-old Roman road in the unsightly mess of houses, now a building on the former good agricultural land of Barton Farm. However, letters in your pages have, from the very start of the planning process, taken the same view, but in vain. If the housing had been kept on the city side of the tree-lined brow of the hill, the Roman road would have remained as it is now, and the lovely view from Three Maids Hill of green fields and downland stayed unspoiled. Planning lawyers frequently advise developers who have received a refusal for some unwelcome but potentially profitable scheme to persevere and reapply again and again in the hope that the constitution of the planning committee will change in time and sooner or later a wrong-headed or indifferent new committee member will vote for it. And it only needs a majority of one. So, forever saddling the community with some monstrous development such as that of Barton Farm, at least let us preserve that name and the memory of what it once was. John Duckworth, 5 Bells Lane, Nether Wallop.
Defend the Hog. Sir, may I be permitted another few lines in defence of the Hampshire Hog? Mr. Pooley, in your letters page of October the 5th, is also mistaken when he says that there is no breed of pig associated with our county. He forgets the Hampshire, with its black body and white band around the four quarters. It may be related to the Wessex saddleback, but has erect rather than floppy ears. I wonder if Mr. Pooley would wish our county cricket club to replace its affectionate nickname of the Hampshire Hog with Hampshire Sheep. I doubt that such a change would inspire much confidence amongst fans of the game. And that comes from Roger Chatterton Newman, who lives in Stretton's Copse in Milland.
And the next one comes from Paul Blithin, and it's headed Confusion Corner. Sir, I opened the Chronicle of October the 5th expecting to see a torrent of letters refuting the content of the letter concerning the Cart and Horses Junction, but there were none. Your correspondent explains that the dangers are caused by drivers' lack of knowledge as to who has right of way. She is right, and goes on to prove her point by describing her understanding of the situation, totally at variance with the intentions of the authorities who redesigned the layout a few months back, I believe. Perhaps the Chronicle could invite the Highways Authority or whoever has responsibility to clarify the matter. The layout was changed to introduce a right-hand curve in the lane for vehicles aiming to turn right into Kingsworthy and a right-hand curve in the continuation of the lane from the B3047 to turn right into the A33 to go south. Both of these lanes have double dashed lines across and triangles painted on the carriageway, that is, give way markings. This is intended to indicate to the traffic exiting the B3047 that they should give way to traffic coming from the right. Similarly, traffic turning right from the A33 into the B3047 is required to give way to traffic from the right, that is, to let cars cross in front of them if the way is clear. Quite at odds with the contents of the previous letter. I went up to the junction to check, and in the 10 minutes I was there, I witnessed several tootings of horns and a serious outbreak of fist waving. I even entered into dispute with a lorry driver, who was frustrated by the driver in front of him because she was letting people out as described above. I told him she didn't have the right of way, and he pointed to the give way signs at the exit of the B3047 and was convinced they meant give way to him. All the give way signage, I believe, refers to traffic coming from the right. How might the authorities make it clear to the road users? And that's from Paul Bithin, London Road, Kingsworthy. And there is a letter editor's note which says, we have asked the County Council and await a reply.
And next, we have another hog letter taking an opposing view from C. Sparks. Sir, can I thank Peter Pooley for supporting me in my case for having the hideous pig removed from the front lawn of the County Council headquarters? It reminds me of a wild boar and not a pig. Can I clarify a few points raised by Roger Chatterton Newman? I am finding it hard to find any links to Hampshire re-pigs. Roger points out that in 1st century AD, a coinage of Bericus depicted a pig on coins, and a poem from 1719 re a boar sent to terrify the people of Hampshire. How does this get to why we have a pig on our doorstep of our county building? I do not know of any links to pigs for Hampshire. Wiltshire, yes, cured ham, bacon, but Hampshire, I think not. Go up to our downs and see again flocks of sheep grazing the hills and downs of Hampshire. Go to the Candover Valleys, to the village of Totford, and find the Woolpack Inn, once the hub of wool, sheared from sheep from the downs, brought down to be packed into bales, taken by flat-bottom barges to Alsford Pond and transferred onto barges to navigate to the Itchen Navigation Canal, to then be sold around the UK or abroad. We are more famed for sheep than ever a pig or pig breeding. Why would they call a breed the Hampshire Down if we did not have one of the best breeds of sheep? And we have been known for our breeding of sheep. If you do any research on the word, hog it keeps coming back to a sheep of 2 years plus, famed for its wool and fine meat, not a pig. No, the pig needs to go to be replaced by a hog it, and our county cricket team have a Hampshire Down ram emblazoned on the jumpers and be known as the Hoggets, not the Spitfires. Maybe HCC like to give the pigs to Wiltshire to stand in front of their county building. More fitting than where it stands now. C. Sparks, Alsford Road, Mournhill, Winchester.
Now here's a plea from Terry Smith. Look after your eyes. Sir, readers may be interested to learn that Thursday, October the 12th was designated as World Sight Day 2017. This was an annual day of awareness to focus global attention on living with blindness or visual impairment, its causes and possible prevention. With this in mind, Open Sight Hampshire, the county's principal organisation supporting people with sight loss, is urging readers to use the day as a timely reminder to think about their and their family's eye care. Open Sight Hampshire, which assists in helping people to adapt and manage their lives which have been altered because of sight loss, has produced Keeping Your Eyes Right, an informative leaflet containing explanations of common sight loss conditions, their causes and suggestions for possible prevention. Contact Open Sight on 02380 641244, that's 02380 6214. I'm sorry, I'll say that again, 02380 641244, to request a free copy or for further information about the organisation's services. And Terry Smith is the Community Development and Support Manager for OpenSite Hampshire.
And now a letter from Stephen Munro on the perennial problem of Winchester traffic, and it's headed up banned deliveries. Sir, would a review of or alteration to the one-way system provide improvement? I doubt it. However, much could be achieved immediately in traffic flow if vehicles were banned from parking, however briefly, in St George's Street and Southgate Street from the morning rush hour to the evening rush hour, that is, from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. This should be prohibited and enforced. Essential deliveries should be outside these hours. The city centre is most often gridlocked because builders' lorries, trade vehicles, delivery vans, etc. stop wherever they please and for as long as they please, particularly in these two main arteries. This makes the movement of vehicles, especially buses, almost impossible at times. Also, on traffic flow and safety, has no one thought of traffic lights to solve the problem of the right turn from the A33 into Kingsworthy? Stephen Munro, Finch's Lane, Twyford.
And the next letter comes from Dr. Michael Bennett and is headed Support for New Centre is Unclear. Sir, your article of the October 5th on the new sports centre is misleading, particularly your report of 90.5% support for the proposal. I am sure that the university and all the clubs pushing for an Olympic pool will be 100% behind the proposal. But the key question of whether the local residents want to close River Park and move to Bar End was not asked by the survey. It was merely a paper process, not a genuine attempt to find out what people wanted. Winchester City Council have still much to learn about meaningful consultation. I am also concerned that no information has been forthcoming on why the City Council allowed the River Park complex to fall into disrepair. Please would the Council explain this before we trust them to spend 30 million or more on a new centre? Dr. Michael Bennett, Fordington Road, Full Flood, Winchester.
If you wish to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can telephone 01962 860836. That's 01962 860836. You can email news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or you can write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. Now, looking back to the history, we begin with news from 200 years ago. Thank you, John.
Yes, Monday, October the 13th, 1817. Early on Sunday morning, a hayrick belonging to Joseph Blotrut, Esquire of Hurstbourne Tarrant, was burnt down, and there is reason to suppose it was willfully done. One night this week, some villains made an attempt to enter the dwelling house of Mr. Godrich of Sevington near Arlesford, but fortunately they were discovered from the noise made by the breaking of the glass in the window where they made the attempt. Consequently, they could not accomplish their purpose and thought it proper to decamp. And it's a very sad little piece. A most distressing circumstance occurred in the family of Mr. Charles Benham of Bentley, the first of this month. One of their children, a girl about 3 years old, was sent to Mr. Robert Benham, the uncle, to be out of the way while the family were washing. Being at play with her cousin, a boy about 11 years old of whom the child was very fond, he, at her request, took her in his arms and was about to carry her into the house through the brew house where they were brewing. Unfortunately, he kicked against the wall of the door and, being unable to recover himself, fell with the child into a kiva of boiling beer wort, by which it was so dreadfully scalded that it died in about 12 hours. The boy was not much hurt.
And now, 100 years ago, and there are two items. Saturday, October the 13th, 1917. A meeting of the local food control committee was held on Monday afternoon. On the proposition of the chairman, seconded by Dr. Prentice, it was decided that a letter be sent to the Minister of Food, requesting a reply to previous communications regarding meat prices. The executive officer was instructed to inform the butchers that a list of meat prices must be exhibited in their shops. It was also agreed that the controller's price for factory butter should be kept within the maximum, and that the public be reminded it is not legal to sell potatoes otherwise than by weight. And the second item concerns an alarming outbreak of fire, which occurred on Sunday evening at Alsford Place, the residence of Percy Laming Esquire. Since the war began, a part of the house has been used as a convalescent hospital for wounded soldiers, and it was in the sleeping quarters that the conflagration took place. At about 6:15 p.m., flames were seen issuing from the windows of the top bedrooms in the northeastern portion of the building by a parishioner passing along the road, and he immediately ran and gave the alarm to those who were in the house. The Alsford Fire Brigade were at once telephoned for and shortly afterwards arrived on the scene. A large crowd also soon assembled. Soon the firemen got to work on the burning building and eventually the fire was got under. At one time, matters looked very serious and it appeared as though the whole mansion was doomed. And it ends there, so we're not quite sure what happened.
And moving forward to 50 years ago, Saturday, October the 15th, 1967, and there are two items. And the first, West Stoke Farm, Stoke Charity, a poultry farm owned by Mr. John Rosell, was among a number of premises entered last weekend in a mini crime wave which hit the Winchester area. A cash box containing £37 is missing from the farm. Business premises and private homes in the city were also entered. Among them, the Carfax in Sussex Street, now a King Alfred's College hostel, where clothing valued at £25 was taken. And a house in St. Peter's Street, where, after forcing a window and making an untidy search, the intruders took £10. The offices of estate agents, Messrs. Young and White, in the square were entered, and tea was drunk on the premises, excuse me, before a Grundig tape recorder valued at £50 was taken. An electric drill is missing from the workshops of the Royal Hampshire County Hospital and the telephone from the taxi rank call box in the Broadway. And the second item, Mr. K.G. Burton, the Regional Commissioner for the National Saving Movement, addressing the annual meeting of the Winchester and District Committee on Thursday, spoke of the challenge of the future which faced the movement. He urged the branch to be critical of all it did, to fight the changes which lay ahead, and to succeed. The problem of the modern society, he explained, was not a lack of money, but a lack on knowledge of how to use it. It was in this context that the street group came into its own, for they were in contact with the housewife, who often needed help in managing money affairs. People in schools and industry also needed similar help, he added, and members should always be prepared to bring new ideas to the notice of the movement's officers.
And here we are on Friday, October the 9th, 1992, that's 25 years ago. Winchester City Council should be able to restart major parts of its modernisation programme, said Chief Executive David Cowan on Wednesday. Following the emergency spending moratorium introduced in the summer, he and other officers had now concluded that the strict terms of the original moratorium could be lifted. The council now also will be able to place a number of important small contracts and resume a more normal standard of activity within approved budgets. But, he said, this does not mean that there will be a marked relaxation of the current controls on spending. The council will still require to be very careful about incurring capital expenditure because of the likely need to provide credit cover for our outstanding Housing Association grant commitment and already committed payments under the existing capital programme. And history was made in Coldon Common last Thursday when residents turned out in force to welcome their first royal visitor. The Duchess of Gloucester spent half an hour in the fast-expanding Hampshire Village, opening the new community centre on Upper Moor Road. Chairman of the Community Association, Mike Gaskell, said, "It's our first and probably our last royal visitor, but we're nevertheless delighted and honoured that the Duchess has found the time for us in a busy schedule."
Hampshire Chronicle comment this week is read by Daphne and will be followed by First Person read by John. Thank you, Daphne.
Council's leadership on social housing. Winchester City Council is to be congratulated for its plans to double its house building programme from 300 to 605 by 2020. That means 600 households will be able to live locally at a decent rent. It will help to ensure that the city retains a social mix of people instead of, as this newspaper has warned before, becoming increasingly middle class. But as Councillor Ian Tate points out, there is much to do. The 600 will do little more than stop the rot. There are still thousands on the waiting list. The bottom line is that the Winchester district needs to see more development of social housing. Too many people think that all development is bad and that opposing it is the right thing to do. The untrammelled building of large family homes is not what is needed, although developers and estate agents would disagree for obvious reasons. What is needed, says Councillor Tate, and the Chronicle agrees, is a carefully planned creation of new council estates. Winchester has a fine record. Stanmore, Winnall and Wick were well designed with good-sized homes with gardens and, when built, a strong community spirit. Many people will disagree, saying the city would be under threat. It's nonsense. Winchester has always evolved. The truth is that for the last 40 years, the biggest threat to the city has been the lack of council house building.
And our contributor this week is Joanna Lewis, and she heads her piece, Taking One for the Team. As you read this, dear reader, I will be airbound for Yale University, invited to give a talk on my forthcoming book. Mid-Atlantic, flying at 40,000 feet, I will be stressed. Not because I'll be worried that should the toilet continually be engaged, there might be an Islamist nutter inside trying to turn his underpants into a weapon of mass destruction. Mm-hmm. No, it will be because I'm going to speak before a distinguished audience in the aftermath of what happened to Theresa May. A horrifying example, if there ever was one, of what can go wrong will go wrong. No matter what your political persuasion, you had to feel sorry for Mrs. May standing there, already fighting for her political life, losing her voice, the stage furniture collapsing around her, and then a strange man lurching towards her with something in his hand. Frightening. Sure, many of us have had public speaking disasters. It could be a wardrobe malfunction, flies slip down, and trousers nearly follow. A talk on uncovering the origins of empire ends with you revealing the contents of your blouse. A mispronounced word, something like a rude one, making everyone snigger. Nerves that make you sweat so much you can't hold your pen and your hair separates. Theresa May took public speaking nightmares to new depths, yet she remained calm, didn't get sweaty armpits, and fought on. And she fought back. Her cabinet has stood by her for now. Her challengers have slipped back into the shadows. If it was Boris Johnson who encouraged the prankster, he's now even less popular amongst his own party, left with the support of only a few Tory MPs a handful of male journalists, and a passing golden retriever. Who would want to be an MP, especially a female MP, in this age of verbal abuse, internet trolling, and humiliating stunts? I can't help thinking that the kind of abuse May gets has a particular nasty streak because she's a woman. George Osborne, the former Chancellor and now editor of the London Evening Standard, was rightly rebuked for his sinister remark that he will not rest until Mrs. May, quotes, is chopped up in bags in my freezer. No woman MP would say something like that about a male MP. When one out of four women will experience some form of domestic abuse in her lifetime, using such potentially inciting language when in the public eye needs to be criminalised. Will the treatment of our only second ever female Prime Minister put off younger women and girls from aspiring to high-profile public careers or even the top job? I hope not, as the statistics are still not good on the numbers of women holding senior positions, where they make the rules of the game fairer. It was only last week that Britain got its first female head of the Supreme Court. Just 28% of court judges are women. Depressingly, two-thirds of girls in the UK have low body esteem and routinely avoid certain social activities. Being confident to speak up in debate is still a challenge for many of my brilliant female students. Mrs. May leads the way on resilience, strength, and remaining task-focused. But we're not all made of such stern stuff. Nevertheless, we can each do something, however small or symbolic. I just threw away my Bowdoin catalogue. There are too many photos of ultra-thin models looking deliberately unsure of themselves and goofy. Why not have one holding a Black & Decker drill looking purposeful, or show a size 16? I really wanted to order their mint green heels to wear at Yale this weekend, but I don't want unrealistic catalogue images lying around for teenage girls to see. So I've taken a hit for the team.
Forum's alternative look at the news this week comprises just two items, the first of which is read by Maria.
And this item is headed Biding Farewell. Bidding Farewell, I beg your pardon. Bidding Farewell to Ian and Audrey Bidgood. Coldon Common bid farewell to two of its longest standing and much loved residents, Ian and Audrey Bidgood, who are moving to Yeovil. The couple have lived in the village for 53 years and have contributed hugely to local life. Ian was a parish councillor for many years and also served as a city councillor, being one of the first Liberal members in the 1970s. He was also mayor, with Audrey as mayoress, in 1981 to 82. Ian was instrumental in helping the village to develop in the 1970s and 80s, ensuring, for example, that there was a good network of pathways linking all parts to be connected. The construction of a new community centre was a big undertaking, which Ian was involved in, as well as the village regeneration project, which brought more play facilities. He identified new money available for youth clubs, and the village was successful in obtaining funds to establish a club and for a detached youth work project. Audrey set up the village care group, which continues to support the elderly. She was a founder member of the Lunch Club, which also continues to thrive, and was on the committee of the patient participation group of the Twyford practice, organising meetings and talks, and was a driver for the prescription delivery service. Audrey was a WI member, a supporter of the Methodist Church, and a flower arranger involved with guides and ladies' groups. Ian and Audrey were presented with many gifts, and transport was arranged by resident Mike Gaskell, who donned a chauffeur's cap to add a special touch to their last day. Tea was arranged in the community centre, provided by the WI, and well attended by friends. And there are two photos with this, one with Audrey and Ian are stepping into a limo with the chauffeur with his hat on, and another photo of them surrounded by cards and photos and presents.
The Guildhall clock is turning red, or is it green? Ever wondered why the Winchester Guildhall clock is sometimes lit up with bright colours? Well, we finally have the answer. After Hampshire police officers raised the question on Twitter, sharing this photo, we put it to Winchester City Council, who said, "The lighting was introduced at the end of July and is set to colours that reflect the events being held in the Guildhall. The clock tower glazing and lighting was replaced earlier this year, and the new system has the ability to change the colour of the lighting." And there is indeed a very striking photograph of the Guildhall clock at night. You can see two faces of the clock, and one indeed is red and the other indeed is green.
This week's announcements begin with a selection of forthcoming events in and around Winchester. On Tuesday the 17th of October, the lunchtime concert at Romsey Abbey at 1:10 p.m. is a recital of English song by baritone Richard Edwards, accompanied by Jilly Lott on the piano, with works by Vaughan Williams, Parry, Gurney and Quilter. Admission is free, but there is a retiring collection. From the 19th to the 22nd of October is King Alfred Weekend at St Bartholomew's Church, Hyde. There are 4 days of talks, displays, demonstrations and guided walks. Among the talks on Friday, October the 20th at 7 p.m, Professor Simon Keynes discusses the Liber Vitae, one of Hyde Abbey's greatest treasures. And on Saturday the 21st of October, a talk by Professor John Hollis is entitled The Development of Archaeology in Hyde and Winchester. Full details of all events and bookings can be obtained at 01962 864487. That's 01962 864487. On Saturday the 21st of October at Winchester College Music School at 7 p.m, there's a piano and violin recital. Tickets cost £15 and can be booked at 07905 625 845. That's 07905 625 845. On Wednesday the 25th of October at St Swithin's Church, Headbourne Worthy at 6 p.m, there's an illustrated talk by former submarine captain John Lang entitled Underwater, Underhand and Damned Un-English. Tickets cost £12, including a glass of wine, and can be booked at 01962 884 098. That's 01962 884 098. And finally, there's a new exhibition at Winchester Discovery Centre from the 14th of October to the 26th of November. It's called Stitching Stories, showing themes of passage and movement of peoples and objects expressed through embroidery. Lighting Up Time ends on Friday the 13th of October at 7:24 a.m. And begins at 6:19 p.m. On Wednesday the 18th of October, it ends at 7:34 a.m. and begins at 6:06 p.m. If you know anyone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. That's 01962 870 370.
M3 teen in court. A Hampshire youth appeared in court yesterday, accused of throwing an incendiary device onto the M3, resulting in a major shutdown. The 17-year-old appeared at Winchester Crown Court, accused of 2 counts of arson with intent to endanger life, and 2 of causing danger to road users in relation to incidents on the motorway near Winchester on September the 16th and 23rd. Hampshire Police said, quotes, a potentially hazardous substance was thrown from a motorway bridge near Winchester on September the 23rd. Both carriageways were closed between junctions 9 and 11 from just before 4 a.m. until after 3 p.m. The defendant, who cannot be named because of his age, is also accused of two charges of blackmail with menaces against a school by demanding payment of £10,000 in the online currency Bitcoin. He is accused of carrying out 8 offences of burglary against the same school, during which computer equipment of an unknown value was stolen. The defendant faces 2 further charges of theft of miscellaneous items from a Tesco supermarket on the days preceding the 2 motorway incidents. Judge Jane Miller, QC, adjourned the case until November the 22nd and remanded the defendant into youth detention custody until then. There was a similar incident on the same bridge which leads to St Catherine's Hill at around 4 a.m. on Saturday, September the 16th.
Youngsters learn the ropes. Hundreds of tree huggers near Winchester took part in an afternoon of climbing and other activities to celebrate the great outdoors. More than 500 people came together for Tree Fest at the John Keeble School in Hursley, which saw pupils take to the tree canopy with zip wiring, as well as take part in rocket launching and bushcraft in the school grounds. There was also pond dipping, pancake racing and nature crafts at the event, now in its 4th year. The event aimed to raise money for its outdoor classrooms operation, with funds raised going towards building unique outside classrooms. Cheryl Rickman of John Keeble's PTA said, "The total is still to be counted, but we believe we've raised around £3,000, which is great considering the weather was not as good as last year. It will go towards our final outdoor classroom. We have big crowds, which was lovely, all taking part in tree climbing in harnesses, pond dipping, pancake racing. We even had 150 marshmallows toasted through the day." And there are for 4 pictures absolutely full of children either ascending or descending from very large trees, all wired up with safety helmets on, and they look like they're having a fabulous time.
Yeah. And more good times here. Science Centre feels the force is the headline. Scores of Jedis, Siths and Stormtroopers were out in force to celebrate one of the most beloved film franchises. Packed into Winchester Science Centre and Planetarium, film lovers dressed up as their favourite Star Wars characters. Fans of all ages enjoyed the day of fun, which included the award-winning science communicator, rapper and co-author of The Science of Star Wars, John Chase, who performed a live show version of his book, exploring the science facts within this popular science fiction. Young fans also got the opportunity to get their picture taken with characters such as Darth Maul, Boba Fett and others. And to top it all off, visitors got to take part in a range of space-themed activities and challenges which took place in the invention studio throughout the weekend. And there's a picture with that. I have a little girl looking not at all threatened and actually quite amused as she's surrounded by stormtroopers.
And now, letter from Westminster, from George Hollingberry, Member of Parliament for Meon Valley and Parliamentary Private Secretary to the Prime Minister. He writes, "Many people may be aware that I have been a keen fisherman for many years. I used to be the chair of the all-party parliamentary group on fishing, and I have shown a keen interest in the health of our unique and world-famous chalk streams here in Hampshire. One of my great honours was being given the title Bass Champion by the Angling Trust for my efforts to conserve this fish. Now, I hope the small amount of work I have done, allied to the tremendous achievement of others in government and the Angling Trust, has paid off for the sea bass as this summer I managed to catch more than a dozen, not quite whoppers, but certainly mature. However, scroll back a few years and I didn't manage to catch a single one of these magnificent fish. Of course, my recent haul over several trips, which I put back, may have just been good luck, but I don't think so, because now we've got a workable plan in place for more than 2 years to allow this species to thrive in our waters. This shows how effective action in the UK and Europe can make a difference. Under the plan, both commercial and recreational anglers can now only catch and keep sea bass over 42 centimetres long, when previously the minimum landing size was 36 centimetres. Bass are a slow-growing species, and females do not become sexually mature in UK waters until they are at least 42 centimetres in length. So the old minimum landing size was doing serious harm and a nonsense. Other conservation measures agreed at European Union level include a ban on pelagic trawling around UK waters during the bass spawning period and a management plan allowing EU fishing boats to only catch between 1 and 3 metric tons of bass per month, depending on the vessel. Recreational anglers can only take 1 bass during a fishing trip. The challenge will be to keep up this good work with our European partners post-Brexit. I'm sure it will happen, because it must, if we are to have fish like sea bass in our waters and those of our friends. Good management also supports jobs. The recreational fishing of species like sea bass is the future for many inshore ports along the south and southwest coasts of England. Commercial fishing for sea bass can also still happen, but we must ensure it is sustainable. I think all this is a sea change, please excuse the pun, and a tremendous success, because it shows we can allow a species to thrive again, and it's a paradigm for how we can make a little difference with negotiation, a little pressure, a proper plan, and some goodwill. It certainly made catching those fish this summer all the better as I slipped them back into the sea, and I hope to see the species go from strength to strength. And that was from George Hollingbury.
Scarecrows help celebrate harvest. First came the Droxford scarecrows. Now, nearly 100 scarecrows of all shapes and sizes have been on parade in another village in the lead-up to its annual harvest supper. The first ever Sparshot Scarecrow Festival, organised by St Stephen's Church, featured entries in gardens and outside the school, which were then moved to the village's memorial hall for its harvest supper last Saturday. Entries included US President Donald Trump, a band of minions from the film series Despicable Me, and the infamous Darth Vader. The mayor, Councillor David McLean, judged the entries and awarded prizes for the best. Ella, Grace and Megan Barnett made the scariest with Howl, and Minions was a popular win as the funniest entry. It was made by Madeline and Jackson Parker, Brooke and Riley Miller, and Ellis and Flynn Cameron. The most inventive was by Inigo and Scout Robinson for The Twins, and St Francis was the mayor's choice, made by Nathan and Jacob Hurley. Gabriella Panadis, Girl in a Blue Dress, won Best of the Small Entries. Mary Loder won Best of the Big Entries with Swede Head. And Jeff Beanland won the most traditional prize. Reverend Jax Machin, Rector of the Downs Benefice, said, "I am over the harvest moon at the creative response to our competition, which embodies the wonderful spirit of St Stephen's School and village community." And there's a couple of photographs of a wide array of very, very colourful scarecrows of all shapes and sizes. And I was lucky enough to see some of them as I've been driving around the last few weeks. But I didn't manage to see Swede Head.
Firm taking on 30 new riders. A delivery company is taking on 30 people in Winchester over the next 3 months as orders in the city rise by over 1,200%. Exclusive new figures show that the number of riders cycling around Winchester for Deliveroo has more than doubled in the last 12 months. Deliveroo, a worldwide company that delivers food from local restaurants to food lovers by bike, has seen its order rate rise by 1,259% in the past year. It comes as the company appeals to new riders in the city to link up with the firm. The new riders are being sought between now and January 2018. Dan Warne, UK Managing Director for Deliveroo, said, "Our rapid growth in Winchester means customers have more choice. Restaurants are able to increase their revenue, and riders have the opportunity to choose well-paid, flexible work. Deliveroo's fundraising will mean greater growth and more innovation. More restaurants will be able to deliver their food direct to people's homes or offices, and there'll be more work available for people who want to be riders and fit their work around their life rather than fitting their life around work." Mr. Warne continued, "Now, right across Winchester, we're looking for more riders to join us as we grow so we can deliver even more amazing food to our brilliant customers." The company has secured $385 million worth of new investment, with the organisation itself now valued at more than $2 billion. James Townley, a rider in Winchester, says, "When I was a student, it was ideal, as I could still fit riding with Deliveroo around my life. Even though my week changed so much from one week to the next, it didn't matter because the model is very flexible. Riders delivering on behalf of the company are self-employed, but link up with the service to deliver food and other goods. However, back in March, concerns were raised about Deliveroo when Winchester man Simon Jones says he was left with to foot a £700 bill when two Deliveroo riders damaged the back of his Ford Focus because the cyclists were uninsured. And 2 months later, police said they were cracking down on rogue Deliveroo cyclists who failed to obey the rules of the road at a PACT, Police and Communities Together meeting. And there's a picture there of something that's becoming more and more of a familiar sight on the streets of Winchester, as a Deliveroo rider in his beige and blue livery and carrying what looks like a massive blue bag on his back speeds through the streets of Winchester.
Burglars wreck Dovecote for lead worth £25. A man has been left counting the cost after thieves damaged a £700 Dovecote to steal £25 worth of lead. Thieves damaged Kenny Dean's £700 bird home to steal just £25 of scrap lead. He returned to his Quarry Road home with his wife on Friday to find the Dovecote lying on the grass with part of its roof missing, and the doves were on the grass nearby. He says, "While we were away, people broke into the garden and somehow managed to knock it down, which is quite hard as it is set in concrete," said Mr. Dean, 55, adding that it took six men to lift it when installed. He says, "I thought it must have been an annoyed neighbour, but the doves don't leave the garden. It cost about £700, but the scrap value of the lead is only £25. I find it amazing that someone is desperate enough to do it for £25. I'm upset that people have stooped to that level." Mr. Dean, who creates art out of old vinyl records and sells them at Winchester Market, says he has been keeping up to 25 of the pet doves for more than 3 years. He added, "I've got to get a new dovecote now, but I've managed to cobble together what was left, so the doves do have a home."
Portraits raise thousands. Celebrities, public figures and unsung heroes were the subjects of a portrait exhibition in Winchester, which has raised thousands of pounds towards a new children's intensive care unit, it has been revealed. The Winchester Portrait Exhibition, held in April, celebrated people who have made an impression on local life through their work and activities. More than 100 subjects were photographed by Michael Butters for the event organised by Twyford artist Nadine Collinson. The exhibition was held to raise funds for Winchester Cathedral, the Paediatric Intensive Care Unit, PICU, at Southampton General Hospital, and the Murray Parishes Trust's #2 million steps campaign for a children's A&E department in Southampton. Now it has been revealed that the exhibition raised £10,800, with a further £10,000 donation made directly to the trust. This donation was match funded by the Barker Mill Foundation, and the combined amount will be match funded by the government to add £40,000 to the #2 million steps campaign. The grand total was revealed by Winchester City Councillor Eileen Berry at Winchester's Langston House Hotel. James Murray, co-founder of the Murray Parish Trust, said, "The WPE was the most unique and creative fundraiser the Murray Parish Trust has had the privilege of being part of." And there is a large photograph with this, with a group of people holding a huge £10,000 cheque.
Court order. Winchester civic chiefs have taken action against the group of travellers at the city's park and ride. City council officers obtained a court order last Tuesday, and it was served last week at the site off Otterbourne Road near Compton, requiring the group to leave. The group had been there for nearly a month. The travellers are reported to have finally left on Friday before the bailiffs were due to move in on Monday, said a city council spokesman.
Winchester nurses celebrate graduation. Newly qualified Hampshire nurses were honoured for their achievements at a special ceremony. Some 28 nurses and midwives marked their graduation at the Hampshire Hospitals NHS Trust's annual badge ceremony. Every year, the Trust presents graduates from universities, as well as nurses returning to practice, with a Hampshire Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust badge that they will wear on their uniform for the rest of their career to show where they trained. Donna Green, chief nurse at Hampshire Hospitals, which runs the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, hosted the event. She said, "I'm a very proud chief nurse. We don't want to miss this moment as your training hospital to congratulate you on your achievement of becoming registered nurses and midwives." As well as their families, friends and colleagues, the graduates were also joined by the Mayor of Winchester, Councillor David McLean, as well as members of the board and Hampshire Hospital's governors. A number of special awards were also announced on the night, with the Taverner Award for the Exceptional Student Nurse of the Year going to Paul Bradley. Paul, 51, has worked as a hairdresser and also ran his own business in the USA before realising that nursing was his true passion. "Life's too short not to fulfil your passion for what you want to do," he said. "I always wanted to do something to make a difference, and I really wanted to work with people. I really enjoy interacting with patients. That's what made me want to be a nurse in the first place. It's great to be able to make them smile and feel good." And there's a lovely picture of the new nurses celebrating their success with broad smiles and arms in the air.
Hole on One wins Mike a Mercedes. A Winchester golfer has won a new car after getting his first ever hole in one against odds of 12,500 to 1. The achievement by Mike Sandbrook took place at South Winchester Golf Club's Captain's Day, which was fundraising for Winchester Youth Counselling. Member Peter Tubb, manager of Marshall Mercedes-Benz at Southampton Airport, organised for an A-class Mercedes worth around £20,000 for anyone able to get a hole-in-one on the par 3 11th hole. Actuaries have calculated the chance of an average golfer making a hole-in-one at around 12,500 to 1. 84 members played on a revamped 15-hole par 3 course, especially designed for the day. This was followed by the afternoon team event, where 130 members played the course. At the 11th hole, with a Mercedes placed next to him, Mike teed off with a 7-iron and watched as the ball flew straight into the hole. Club captain Steve Barney said, "This sort of thing very, very rarely happens on an ordinary golf day, let alone a special event like this." And on the actual hole that has been sponsored, and there's a picture of Mike Sandbrook standing next to his new Mercedes with the keys in his hand.
Now, here's one of those intriguing headlines, but all will become clear. School team in arena climb. An intrepid team from Peter Simmons College braved wind and rain to climb over a landmark London building for charity. The college's study support team made their way over part of the O2 Arena to fundraise for Bishop's Waltham Gateway, a club for adults with learning difficulties. The team consisted of Joy Hill, study support administrator, Sarah Gibson, head of study support, Chris Costadel, learning support assistant, and Steve Mullins, study support coordinator, together with Joy's son David, who regularly benefits from the charity, and also Joy's husband Andrew. Joy said, "It was an exhilarating experience and a good opportunity for team bonding too. In encouraging each other on the climb, we did really well." The weather conditions were appalling, which made it an even greater challenge. The team raised £965 in sponsorship, which will go a long way in helping the charity to meet the needs of its users. And there's a picture of the team standing by the O2 Arena looking very intrepid and happy and successful, but also extremely cold and wet.
No new fines for fly tipping. Not a single person has been issued with an on-the-spot fine for fly tipping in Winchester during the first year of the new penalty coming into effect, new figures have revealed. The powers, which were introduced in May 2016, allow councils around the country to issue fixed penalty notices worth between £150 and £400. Figures have shown that Winchester City Council didn't issue a single penalty in the year to May the 8th, along with nearby local authorities Test Valley Borough Council, Southampton City Council and Fareham Borough Council. A number of other councils around the country also didn't hand out any of the new penalties. New Forest District Council issued one, worth £300, while figures for Eastleigh Borough Council were not available. Brighton and Hove Council issued the largest amount, with 276 given out, pulling in more than £16,000. However, as previously reported, Winchester City Council said it had a 100% conviction rate for fly tipping cases taken to court, with judges ordering £26,606 to be paid back in fines and costs, as well as imposing a 12-month custodial sentence in one case. Winchester City Council has been approached for comment.
Children skipping ahead to raise money for charity. Pupils have raised money for charity by taking part in a sponsored skip-a-thon. Stanmore Primary School raised funds for the British Heart Foundation by taking part in the Jump Rope for Heart event. Pupils skipped for the entire day, with children from each year taking part in half-hour sessions in the school hall from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. Younger children took part in skipping exercises, while older ones tried double Dutch skipping with long ropes. The school plans to continue their fundraising, with events taking place during break times in the hope of reaching the target of £600. Pupils will continue to raise money for the British Heart Foundation, as the student councils, Speak, have chosen it as their adopted charity. As well as skipping in the run-up to the event, the children also learned how to maintain happy, healthy hearts. PE manager Wendy Bucket, who oversaw the day, said, "I was really heartened to see the kids throw themselves into it and thrilled at their enthusiasm. I would like to thank the British Heart Foundation, giving us the ropes and the support they have provided." Those interested in supporting the school's charity effort can donate online at www.justgiving.com/fundraising/Stanmore Primary School.
New council homes scheme seeking contractors' bids. It's going to be one of the Winchester district's most visible council home schemes. Proposals for affordable housing for the valley in Stanmore are making progress. The City Council, which already has planning permission for the 76 homes, is now seeking tenders for construction. The scheme includes 1, 2 and 3 bedroom flats, 2 and 3 bedroom houses and a 3 bedroom home, with associated landscaping and parking. It's the largest council house building project since the authority started to build again in 2012 and will be high profile on the hillside overlooking Stanmore and St Cross. The Cabinet Housing Committee has approved a business case and is seeking tenders from interested contractors. The council will also submit a grant funding bid to the homes and community agencies to help with capital costs. Caroline Horrell, City Council leader, said, "There is a huge problem of housing affordability locally, and the council is committed to providing new council homes to tackle the problem." She continued, "The Valley is a key part of our strategy to double the number of council homes built between 2017 and 2020 and provide good access to affordable housing options for our residents. To minimise risk and help ensure the scheme is delivered on time and on budget, a two-stage tender process is being used, meaning contractors can price elements of the contract works at an advanced stage." Andrew Palmer, head of New Homes Delivery, said, "This is the largest new homes project the council has developed to date and will provide modern, well-designed flats and houses with very low running costs. The full business case is likely to go to Cabinet for approval in February 2018. And there's one of those computer-generated images of what the development might look like, and it does look really lovely.
Christmas charity to gain from power cuts. Something positive has belatedly come out of serious power cuts in Alsford in the summer. Scottish and Southern Energy Networks, SSE, has donated £500 to the town's Christmas tree fund as a way of apology. Back in July, there was a series of cuts in the town centre, which was temporarily off-grid for planned works, meaning the busy West Street and Broad Street shops and homes were being powered by large generators. But one of the rigs failed just after 9 a.m. on a Saturday morning and wasn't back online until early afternoon. A similar power cut a few days earlier cost many businesses valuable trade. MP Steve Brine criticised SSE for a totally unacceptable debacle. He said SSE did eventually confirm that the generator ran out of fuel due to a miscalculation. The company was keen to apologise to those businesses affected, while confirming it had since revised its calculation methods to factor in additional fuel when refuelling. Mr Brine added, "The apology was very welcome, and they offered to donate £500 to the town as a goodwill gesture." Oliver Barnes from the Alsford Pigs Association, I guess they are the fundraisers, said, "We are thrilled with this generous gesture from SSE, and it's very fitting we can use these funds to help light up Alsford's Christmas." Ray Hunter, SSE's regional network construction manager, added, "We are delighted to be helping Alsford Pigs with this year's tree."
Flood defence plans revealed. Plans to prevent a repeat of the nightmare flooding of villages during the winter of 2013-14 have left Winchester's MP feeling underwhelmed. Civic chiefs met villagers to discuss the Outer Winchester Flood Alleviation Scheme, which aims to mitigate the impact of any future floods in Littleton, Kingsworthy and Headbourneworthy. Winchester and Charlesford MP Steve Brine said, "The floods of winter 2014 were such a nightmare for parts of Littleton and the Worthies. I think residents are genuinely pleased to see ideas being discussed. We have, of course, already seen some changes, such as work undertaken by the residents themselves in Pitter's Close. But we now need the county to piece it all together across the three villages. I was a little underwhelmed by this exhibition, to be honest, but hope it was a useful exercise in public engagement, because whatever is done must command wide support. I think we all should reserve judgment until final plans are published in the spring. During the winter of 2013-14, Hampshire suffered some of the heaviest rainfall in around 200 years, and Littleton, Headbourneworthy and Kingsworthy were affected by flooding. Hampshire County Council has been working with the Environment Agency, Winchester City Council and the local parish councils to implement measures to reduce the impact of flooding and to look at how surface water flooding can be better managed in this part of Winchester in the future. Councillor Rob Humby, Executive Member for Environment and Transport at the County Council, said, "We've been working with our partners to explore how we might reduce the risk of flooding. The County Council is committed to helping communities become more resilient to the impact of flooding, and we continue to work with our partners to secure the funding needed to bring forward improvements."
Annual Law Sunday Service. Judges, barristers and councillors paraded through Winchester City Centre to celebrate the rule of law in Hampshire at the weekend. The Winchester Cathedral service marking the occasion has now become one of the biggest in the city's calendar, after members of the public were invited to watch the legal staff walking through the city centre in their colourful robes to the cathedral. Hampshire High Sheriff Mary Montague Scott also hosted a drinks reception for those attending the service held on Sunday, October the 8th. Miss Montague Scott said, "It's a great occasion to recognise all those associated with law and order and the judicial system in our county of Hampshire." The annual Law Sunday celebration is designed to mark the standing that Winchester has in the legal community, being home to one of Britain's most important Crown Courts. It also recognises the legal profession's contribution to the city. Amongst those joining Miss Montague Scott were Judge Keith Cutler, Recorder of Winchester, various barristers who work at Winchester Crown Court, solicitors and other representatives of the local community. Joining them were city councillors, including members of the cabinet, and several former mayors, including Richard Izard, Jane Rutter, Ernie Jeffs, Eileen Berry and Mike Reed. They followed the Winchester mace, the ceremonial symbol of the city, and that's accompanied by two very, very Winchester photos. Photographs of various dignitaries in the legal profession in their colourful regalia entering the ancient doorway of our cathedral.
Members of the Winchester Winemakers Circle had an interesting evening at their September meeting, with a break away from wine-themed evenings, instead a talk by Don Cox entitled "Things I Never Threw Away." Don brought along a huge and varied collection of items, which he briefly explained the origins of to the members. There were a great many items which he had dug up in his back garden over time, including a lead sailor, clay pipes, fossils, and innumerable old bottles of all shapes and sizes. He also brought along albums of cigarette and tea cards, petrol station coin collections, milk bottles that used to carry adverts, old coins, an endless list of intriguing items and items that led members down memory lane. Following the formal part of the evening, members were able to handle and mull over for themselves the things Don had brought. Leo Wolfe thanked Don on behalf of members, saying he was now himself reflecting on what he had at home, which he had never thrown away.
And that concludes the extracts for this week. Thank you to our editors, Angela Ling, Carol Fraser and Jane Thomas. Thank you to our copying and dispatch and studio preparation teams. And thank you to our readers, Maria Head.
Goodbye.
John Regan.
Bye-bye now.
And Daphne Poupart.
Goodbye.
And from me, Tom Williams, goodbye, and do enjoy the week ahead. Please post your memory sticks back as soon as possible in your wallet, and when you put the label in the wallet, please try to ensure that the cord attached to the memory stick is fully inside. Thank you.